Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
With Gene and Chris in the Paracast, we have Kevin Randall and Scott Ramsey, ostensibly to debate the Aztec case, but we're getting into more complicated subjects here, like, do UFOs come from here? Do they come from the dimensional portal? Look, scientists are already starting to figure they might be able to swing some kind of warp drive, Chris.
I did see the headline on that. I need to read the article. That'll be a good one for forum.theparacast.com, your first stop shop for all cool cutting-edge articles and comments about, you know, breaking topics and old cases.
All right, let's get back to this discussion about Aztec, but let's get a progress report first, okay? Kevin Randall, listening to Scott Ramsey for the first two-thirds of the show. Anything he say sway you at all, change your mind, correct any assumptions you had about the Aztec case?
The problem remains the same that we've always had. I'm just not thrilled with some of the witnesses, such as Doug Noland or Ken Farley. I need to see more information about that. I'm always willing to look at information like that. And Scott, you're under no obligation to share it with me for any reason whatsoever. But it just seems that the whole case hinges on a very, very tenuous thread. And we need to see something that is pre-Scully to kind of drive us forward. And we really don't have that. We have people who came forward after Scully. Lots of people came forward after Scully's book came out and talked about this, but we really don't have the good stuff, and we haven't really talked about the one fellow from Aztec who contacted me or posted a bunch of stuff about the
Monty Shriver.
Yes, I was going to say post a bunch of stuff about Aztec is what I was groping for, but yes, good old Monty Shriver.
What about him? Explain this to our listeners, because we are playing a little bit of inside baseball here.
Well, Monty Shriver is a great guy. He works down he's retired now. He worked down at the University of New Mexico in Las Cruces. And Monty's from the Aztec area. He wrote a 17-page rebuttal to our book. And in his case, where I kind of get on you guys for not reading the book in detail, Monty did read the book in detail and cites page number, paragraph number, and things that are said. And I'm just about three-quarters of the way done responding to his 17-page with my 22-page, might be 25 when I'm done. He brings up good points, but he's more picking on the details of the book, where I call Mount Taylor, it's really Taylor Mountain. Again, I'm citing, and that's the same part where Manuel Sandoval is. Suzanne and I are interviewing Johnny Hernandez. I should have put it in quotes to show that it was Johnny telling me Mount Taylor instead of Taylor Mountain. But, you know, to Monty's point on those type of things, he's right, I'm wrong.
Scott, let me interject here that mm-hmm. when I was reading his rebuttal to your book, I thought some of the same things, that some of this stuff is very trivial and unimportant to the discussion of the case. And that was one of the things that struck me. It really is irrelevant to trying to figure out whether or not Aztec was real. So I agree with you on that point.
Yeah. And, you know, he brought up a point. He said, well, you know, I'm talking and moving the craft, the section of the book. Suzanne and I went out and did the reenactment with Bill Metzger. And all that was based on the museum saying, you know, hey, how'd they get that out of there? And I said, well, we've been asking ourselves that question for a long time. And so we did research, thank you, Aztec Pioneer Museum, and came up with the fact that highway today, it's 550, back years before it was 440. In 48, it wasn't complete. And it was actually built to get people down to Chaco Canyon because, you know, they were uncovering the structures down there. Monty came back and said, no, that's not true. That road 44 was complete in 48. You know, my response to that to Monty is, thanks, you just made our life a lot easier. Moving it down 44 would be a cakewalk. But thanks to the Bureau of Land Management just sending us new maps, Monty is off a year. That road was not complete in 48. It's like Kevin said, it's kind of trivial stuff back and forth, but I appreciated it because, for the next reprint, he showed me some spelling errors, too, so I appreciate that.
Well, one of the things that's always intrigued me about the case is the apparent infrastructure that was left behind, the concrete pad, the physical evidence, obviously, in these cases, or potential physical evidence, is really important in my book. And Scott, why don't you talk a little bit for our folks out there that aren't up to speed on some of the, again, the details of this particular case. Tell us about the infrastructure and claims that have been made about it.
Well, one is the concrete slab, which I find it intriguing. It's there. It's, again, it's not a smoking gun to anything. It has no place there. The gentleman, George, that we refer to in the book, who was never at the crash site, by the way, he never left Walker. He said he coordinated a recovery effort, and basically his job was to worry about personnel files and who was at the crash site. But he did tell us when we interviewed him to be cognizant of a concrete footer. He didn't use the word slab. I know Steinman had mentioned it. We had never been able to find it. Randy Barnes, a local gentleman that used to live in Aztec, went out there with rebar and poked through the silt until he found it. It was approximately the same dimensions that Steinman talked about. We took samples of the concrete slab, sent them to a concrete lab. Unless we have $25,000 to do a leach test, dating it earlier than 48 or very much later than 48 is going to be very expensive. The lab granted us so much lab time. We come into the point that it's about that era. And as we all know, because it was a concrete lab that did the test, that rebar is all date stamped. And it is dated prior to 48. Rebar sits around in inventories for many, many years, especially during the war and after the war. So the concrete slab is an interesting piece of physical evidence. It's not a compressor pad. It's not a well cap like Carl Flock said. We drilled a hole through it to do a core sample. But again, you know, what the hell is it doing? You know,
Well, why don't you describe why you would have a concrete pad to
the weight of a
crane that would be lifting a heavy object? Did you do any sort of test to find if there were metal abraded onto the concrete?
Oh, yeah. It's full of, I forget, I have it in the book, 5/8, 3/4 rebar and pencil rod. So whatever it was poured for, it's 9 3/4 inches thick. The gentleman, George, told us a delay was made when this mystery road was cut to get you out to the crash site. And a concrete footer had to be poured to support one of the legs of the crane or possibly two legs of the crane. And he said, I know that delayed thing, so look for that. He was giving us a whole list of things to look for. That was found. Yes, it's heavily reinforced. I forget what the lab says it would hold per square inch, much more than you could imagine for a compressor pad. And it's much smaller than a compressor pad. And by drilling through it, we proved it wasn't a well head or a well cap, nor would you have one at that up on top of a mesa. You'd have one at the base. Like I say, it's an interesting piece. I think it deserves mention as part of the story. I don't know even with the leach test you're going to get it right at 1948. Some say yes, some say you can get it within 6 months. A leach test, by the way,
there's no apparent reason why something like that would be there out in the middle of BF nowhere.
No, that's right.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, no. I kind of know the area, and you would really need a reason to pour something like that in the location that it's found.
It was poured with Portland-style concrete, and the grouting in it, meaning the rocks, our local sifted rocks where they took the silt and they took the little pebbles and whatnot, mixed that with the concrete to pour it. It does look like whatever it was done for, it was done in a hurry. And it was done for a tremendous amount of weight.
So no records from local cement companies, any of the people that would pour concrete at the time, there's no mention or records or any sort of documentation about who actually may have been hired locally. Obviously, the Army may have come in and done it itself, but if not, somebody local must have somehow gotten a truck out there or a mixer and poured the thing, right?
We're going to pour some commercials on you right now, folks. Not concrete, but we're going to give you some special announcements with Scott Ramsey, Kevin Randall, Gene, and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and floating phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO at WebTV.net. That's MrUFO at WebTV.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Quantitative easing, unemployment at depression levels, Europe financial system falling apart, China getting out of U.S. treasuries. At the end of 2008, the time of TARP, the national debt was at $11 trillion, gold trading around $850 per ounce. Close to 2012, the national debt exceeded $16.4 trillion, gold doubled to $1,600 per ounce. The $20 trillion threshold for the national debt is inevitable. Politicians in Washington have a ferocious appetite for spending and stimulus. What's worse, a printing press to finance. 100 years ago, we had a gold standard to limit this madness, but now you have to adopt your own gold standard. Don't be fooled with paper promises. Get Midas Resources 10 Reasons to Buy Gold free by calling 800-686-2237. Understanding the gold and silver market may be the only insurance you could have to avoiding the next economic crisis. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order your free copy. Again, that's 800-686-2237.
There are those curious about bitcoins and those using and making money with bitcoins. What are bitcoins? A bitcoin is the first decentralized currency that can be easily transferred from person to person over the internet. No bank needed. This means lower fees and accounts can never be frozen, limited, or closed. You are in control of your money. And the best part? You can start earning and making money with bitcoins right away. No computer or expertise is required to earn money with bitcoins, and a growing number of merchants now accept bitcoins. Plus, they're easily exchanged for dollars, euros, and more. Learn more about the easiest, cheapest, most profitable way to enter the Bitcoin market and get paid every 2 weeks by one of the fastest growing Bitcoin miners in the world at cloudhashing.com. Just like it sounds, cloudhashing.com. That's cloudhashing.com. We mine your business.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy-free. Contains all natural and certified organic ingredients. Contains no preservatives or animal products. Supports a healthy digestive and immune system. Supports weight loss. Improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses 3 groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraGanix.com, Terraganics.com, or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM-1, the raw probiotic.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Okay, back to pouring that concrete. Kevin Randall, Scott Ramsey with Gene and Chris. Scott?
You wouldn't have needed a concrete truck out there to pour this. You would have needed sufficient water, a mixing trough, some type of screen sifter to sift out the local rock, mix it, put up some forms, pour it. It wouldn't have been a big deal at all.
All you needed was a little mixer or something out there.
You could even do it by hand. Yeah, when we installed the plaque out there, we did it with, you know, just a trough of Portland concrete and some water and.
Wow, so you've put a plaque out there already.
Oh, there's been a plaque out there for a number of years.
Wow.
The plaque itself, 9 3, I'm looking at dimensions here, 9 3/4 thick. This is on BLM land. Let's keep that in mind. When we went to drill the hole, we had to go to the Bureau of Land Management. Technically, we're not allowed to go out there and walk around for commercial purposes unless you have a permit. People go out there and film documentaries all the time. If they get caught, they're in trouble. I've only been involved in one film company that has done that with a permit. But we had to go to the BLM and say, here's the slab, here's a picture of it. Bill Pappage went out to the site with us from the BLM and says, we own the land. There's no reason for this to be here. If you want to drill it, have at it. We had a drilling company come in, drill the core sample. We took the sample, sent it to a lab. Technically speaking, if I wanted to lift the thing up tomorrow and throw it on the back of a flatbed or a trailer and haul it out of there, we could, because the BLM says it's not ours. We have no idea why that's here.
Is there any other earthly reason why it would be there other than to be used for the purpose of perhaps transporting this craft?
Well, it could be there for the purpose of having something extremely heavy that has nothing to do with a flying saucer, but the key thing is it has nothing to do with a compressor pad. That is, and for your listeners, that is heavy, heavy to this day, oil and gas. You've got natural gas out there. You've got crude oil. You don't drill a hole through a mesa to get to the natural gas. You go to the bottom of the mesa down closer to the ground, and you drill your hole. Compressor pad, 60, 40, 50 feet in length. This thing is a square meter, basically 39 by 39 by 9 3/4. So it serves no purpose.
Wow, that's small. I was under the impression it was larger.
No. It's a square meter. It's almost there to support some type of crane. Believe me, we've gone through the Bureau of Land Management, even the Bureau of Reclamation, which had some rights just north of there, which is more your power and utilities. Nobody can explain it. The El Paso oil workers, nobody. Williams Oil Company, no. Dugan Oil Company, no. Chambrelet, no. Nobody can make claim to it or explain why it's out there.
And how were you made aware of this? When did this actual piece of potential physical evidence surface in the story, in the investigation?
In our interview with George. I said, we don't even know if we're at the right site. And he gave us a couple of things. And he mentioned the cut-in road. I said, well, yeah, the funny thing, we're at an area that there is a road that's cut. By the way, that doesn't appear unless they just added it to any Bureau of Land Management maps, which they update them every couple of years. And we've been to the site with the BLM. And this slab is at the figure kind of like a little cul-de-sac where somebody has cut a road into a mesa. This is right at the end of the cul-de-sac where it looked like it was supporting something.
So you knew about the actual location or the site before you were given the information to go look for this little pad, and then you were able to find it. Correct me if I'm wrong.
We thought we were at the right spot based on what locals were telling us.
Right.
We weren't sure. We thought we were at the right spot.
But then you got the information later about the pad, and then that confirmed it for you?
Yep, and then Randy, a year or two later, confirmed that Steinman was talking about a slab. Steinman's actually got a little map drawn in his book, UFO Crash at Aztec, and that they all matched up pretty good.
So what do you think of that, Kevin? Does that is that like a point in the positive side of the column here?
At this point, not really.
No? So what else could a pad like that have been used for? Why would somebody go to the bother of putting a meter square, 9 thick pad on top of a mesa in BF Nowhere, northeastern New Mexico?
I have no clue. I mean, that's really not a fair question, but
well, it is to me. I've been out, you know, in areas like that, and to have
I'm supposed to come up with why somebody poured a pad of concrete in some.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm racking my brain trying to come up with some rationale to do that, and I'm coming up blank. So I was hoping you were going to help me.
No, I'm not. I can't help you on that one. All I was going to say.
Okay, well, I think that's pretty cool myself. I think physical evidence that's gained.
But it's not physical. Right now, it's all you have is a concrete pad.
True.
Scott himself said that the rebar is dated prior to 1948. Scott also said that these things lay around, so the fact that the rebar is dated prior to 1948 may not be relevant. I'm thinking we need to wait for, and I understand the monetary problem with the test, but we need to wait for the test before we draw any conclusions.
And that can narrow it down to within 6 months.
Wow. That's testing the actual concrete.
Mm-hmm.
Or the aggregate within the concrete.
No, that's doing it. You're bombarding the actual Portland concrete. The aggregate's millions of years old, so we can't age that.
But I was going to say, it's kind of like the question of the alien autopsy film, where they had the coating from Kodak. And the coating from Kodak was 1947, but Kodak recycled the coating every 20 years, so the film could have been from 1927. And the people with the alien autopsy film never allowed the film to be tested by Kodak to determine, because they could determine pretty much when it had been developed, and that would be a critical thing to know.
Yeah, obviously, yeah.
And if it dated from 1947, well, that's a very nice piece of evidence, but without that dating, merely the code being there doesn't prove that the film was exposed in 1947, only that the coding was for the right year. So all I'm saying is on this, it's an interesting piece of evidence, but right now we can draw no conclusion from it.
Right. Well, back to the original question that Gene posed for you, Scott. What else has come up after the book, and what other leads are you chasing down right now?
An interesting one that I'm talking to a gentleman. He's very, very sharp in his mind, but I guess the body's starting to go. He lives down in Bullhead City. The gentleman that worked at Los Alamos, we kind of got sidetracked on that. Either in 48 or 49, late winter, we can't at this point nail it down to what date, although he gave me a lead that we could look at get real close to the date. They were on standard patrol at Los Alamos. This is the time that the green orbs, for lack of a better word, I hate to call them that, but the green orbs are going all over Cuba, New Mexico, Los Alamos.
The green fireballs.
And, even Teller is brought into the loop on that. The Atomic Energy Commission notes on those are kind of interesting. This gentleman says, yeah, we had the green fireballs, but then one night we had at the main gate a huge UFO sighting.
Let's proceed with that as we progress to our final two segments.
Mm-hmm.
The book is The Aztec Incident, Pro and Con with Scott Ramsey and Kevin Randall with Gene and Chris in
Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code Night Owl. Use the coupon code Night Owl to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
What's safer and cheaper than prescription drugs?
Glad you asked. The answer is Renovation Teas. Herbal remedies are much safer and much cheaper than prescription drugs. Taste great, and most importantly, herbal teas are effective and non-addictive. Renovation Tea is especially unique, and here's why. We spent years researching herbs and their beneficial properties. Renovation Teas uses only 100% organic fair trade herbs. Our teas are blended towards specific ailments and health conditions, such as diabetes, blood pressure, anxiety, libido, detox, and much more. All Renovation Teas are formulated and hand-filled in Arkansas. Take care of yourself naturally, the way Mother Nature intended. Order Renovation Teas at renovationtea.com or call 870-784-3121. That's 870-784-3121. Renovation Teas. Renovate your health one bag at a time.
If you owe the IRS back taxes, listen carefully. Sweeping changes to IRS policies will help more people than ever eliminate their tax debts once and for all. And now, I can help you reduce or eliminate your tax debts and end your tax nightmare. Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I've helped thousands of people reduce and eliminate tax debts they couldn't pay, and after more than 30 years of experience dealing with the IRS, I can tell you there's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. And with the IRS's new policies, it's easier than ever to put your tax debt behind you once and for all. Call now at 800-346-6829 to learn how I can help you. You know your IRS debt will not go away by itself, but you don't have to live in fear anymore. Call 800-346-6829. Learn how I can help you eliminate wage and bank levies, release tax liens, and negotiate a settlement with the IRS that will put your tax nightmare behind you forever. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to taxhelponline.com. That's taxhelponline.com.
Utopia Silver understands that mainstream medicine and the rising cost of health care can financially destroy any family. We simply cannot afford to get sick. The only option is to stay healthy. Americans are learning that ill health is not caused by a deficiency of drugs. It's usually the result of a deficiency of minerals, vitamins, proper nutrition, and exercise. UtopiaSilver.com offers colloidal silver and healing protocols for vaccine and radiation poisoning, arthritis, insomnia, and more. If you're sick of unconstitutional government mandates, then stand up now and say no. The time is growing short to put this evil genie back in its bottle. Join Utopia Silver in promoting good health and fighting for our God-given health care rights. Visit UtopiaSilver.com, UtopiaSilver.com, or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338.
Hi, this is nuclear physicist lecturer Stanton Friedman. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
With Gene and Chris in the Paracast, we're, as they say, winding down, but a lot to discuss. And I think when we mentioned before that when it comes to the Aztec incident, perhaps a show of this nature would have to be doubled in size to get to all the nooks and the crannies and the minute details that still need to be unearthed.
No, I think it would take more than that, actually. There's a lot here. Kevin, what was the name of the project that was formed by the
Twinkle.
Military? Moomin?
No, Twinkle. Project
Twinkle, that's
was
right.
The project the green fireballs.
Right, yeah. So there were some really cool sightings of those, as Scott pointed out, in the Cuba area. And I think the most famous one, wasn't it like some stadium in Santa Fe? Everybody in the stadium saw
there
one
were,
of these things?
There were any number of spectacular.
Yeah, there was one. There were thousands of people that witnessed it, though. So anyway, Scott, you have your guy that's working down, you think, in the area down in Los Alamos around the time frame, 48, 49, continue.
Yeah, we don't know for sure if it's 48 or 49. He did give us some good information. We can pull up and archive what he's about, what he told us, what I'm about to tell you. They're summoned to the main gate of Los Alamos, which is the Santa Fe side. When you come up the front, there's this huge, as he describes, flying saucer. It overhangs so many feet of each side of the road. It's only 50 feet off the ground, multiple stories tall. And he's telling me the story. And like I say, he's a very sharp mind. And I think Robert Hastings is going to interview him here shortly. And we are allowed to release his name. I'm waiting for a few more documents, but he's given us the go-ahead to do that. And he said that all of a sudden the Army half-tracks and everything showed up to possibly shoot it down. And I said, whoa, 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 wait. Los Alamos never had armament. He said, what makes you say that? And I said, I've already researched that to see if the Aztec situation was something that was shot down, whether it be a flying saucer, Soviet bomber, whatever. And he said, oh, they're still talking that story about Los Alamos didn't have any armament. And I said, well, you're a national lab, not a military outpost. He said that there was military equipment there the entire time he was there. Now, Los Alamos is a customer of mine. I do see them when I go out to the Four Corners. I have checked. Yes, they did have, to his point, half-tracks, military half-tracks with armament on them back in the late 40s and early 50s. They weren't supposed to, but they had them. So, and what happened was they were worried that this object was going to do something. It stayed around a few minutes, shot off, and was never seen again. But it was interesting for him to confirm, I didn't care that much about the sighting, the fact that they had military equipment at Los Alamos in that time frame.
What was the armament?
Half tracks.
No, no, that's not armament. That's a vehicle. What was the armament? What did they?
Oh, they was some type of, I forget what millimeter canyon. He told me. I don't have his notes in front of me, but you know, definitely something that could shoot at an object or brought up to the front gate.
Well, Kevin, back during that time frame, what were half tracks normally armored with? A 50 cal, maybe a.
That's what I was thinking. It would be a 50.
A 20 millimeter cannon, possibly, but.
I would expect if it was a half track, it would probably have nothing bigger than a 50 cal in it. Probably, maybe just a 30 caliber machine gun. I don't know. That's why I ask, because I know flying helicopters, a 50 caliber machine gun was quite a frightening thing. But
sure.
But if you're in an armored vehicle, a 50 caliber machine gun isn't quite that frightening. So I was just curious as to what the armament was, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if they had things with. At least 30 caliber.
Yeah, if they didn't, boy, they were dropping the ball. My goodness.
Well, just the fact that technically, if you go back in history, they weren't supposed to have any military support at all. But what even made it even more ironic, when he got the book, then he called me back and he said, you know, it's funny, these radar bases, the Alvada radar base, it had a call sign of Los Alamos. I said, yeah, the first 2 years it was Los Alamos radar base. He said, here, you're shocked that you're finding out we had offensive and defensive equipment here at Los Alamos, and I'm shocked because we didn't know about the radar base. So that's how secret these operations were.
Sounds like your tax dollars at work and play, boy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that shows the level of secrecy that was going on to protect Los Alamos and the post-Manhattan Project.
But it doesn't necessarily prove that the Aztec case occurred.
No, but it also gave, it now shows, and we're not done with the research, I'm not going to, based on one statement, take that to the bank, but I mean, he's a credible guy, but we have to do more research. It shows that they had the potential of shooting something down.
Yeah, okay, arguably, but what other leads are you working on? That sounds like a really potentially fruitful avenue to go down, but what other leads are you tracking up?
The statements made by the ranchers that Suzanne and I met out at the book signing. That's got my plate pretty full right now.
Care to elaborate just a little bit? Give us a teaser.
Pardon?
Give us a teaser.
Okay, well, we talked about it. We were doing our lecture and our book signing, and we were approached by, when I say rancher, I really mean ranch hand, that filled in some blanks on one of the ranchers that we purposely left out of the book because there had been claims made over the years, but we could never find anything either way. And he is starting to fill in the blanks with some things he's telling us.
Right. You did mention that earlier. And that could be, you know, potentially a fruitful avenue to go down. Kevin, what are some of the things that you would suggest to Scott that could possibly aid him in his process of really confirming this case?
I don't think there's anything I can really tell him that he hasn't thought of. You know, what he needs is...
Well, more minds are better than one, Kevin.
As I was going to say, he needs to find some documentation from 1948 that predates Scully that suggests the events took place there. He needs to... You've got some people... in your book, for example, you've got Samuel Bass,
mm-hmm.
who supposedly... confirmed to, and I forget who he confirmed it to.
Virgil Riggs.
Yes. And then he went off and got killed in Vietnam by a hit and run accident.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no evidence that happened.
Well, your argument is there's no evidence because he doesn't appear on the Vietnam Wall Memorial.
No, my argument is. There are complete records of everyone who died in Vietnam, regardless of the cause.
Mm-hmm.
Their names appear on the wall, but there's other databases that can be researched, and there is no one by that name, by the proper name, and it wasn't Sam, as you well know.
Yeah, Sam was a nickname. That's correct.
Yeah, but there was no Air Force person killed in that way in Vietnam. So you need to kind of look at that sort of thing and see if you can find a record to suggest that. When you get military witnesses, you need to go to St. Louis to check their records to make sure that they are who they say they are and they did what they say they did, and they had the training they claim to have had. Because
they have a DD-214, correct?
Mm-hmm. You've got to verify those, because I can't tell you how many fake ones I've seen now. Frank Kaufman had all the documents you could care to see to prove that he was who he said he was, but when we went to St. Louis, we found out that he had altered the documents. So even though you've got a DD Form 214, you've got to go to St. Louis to make sure that they haven't doctored it. Robert Willingham did the same thing. We clearly doctored documents and forms, and when we went to St. Louis, we discovered he hadn't been a full colonel in the Air Force. He had been an E-4, a low-ranking enlisted man in the Army, at the very end of World War II. So you've got to look at all of those sorts of things as you do to verify that. You've got to make sure that people were there and had a reason for being there when they claimed to being there. We found people who claimed to have been in Roswell, and when we confronted them with the evidence they were not, and then we find out their story was bogus. So, I mean, you've got to verify all those sorts of facts.
Oh, we do.
I can't wait for George.
He asked me what I would suggest.
Yeah, I must say.
All right. Folks, we're almost there, almost wrapped up with this segment of the PowerCast. The book is called The Aztec Incident, and we have Kevin Randall talking to Scott Ramsey, Kevin being the skeptic in terms of the possibility of an Aztec crash, Scott Ramsey giving us the case for it happening. More to come with Gene and Chris. You're in
the PowerCast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to DreamHost.com/radio, DreamHost.com/radio. Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com.
You are now considered a terrorist. It doesn't matter if you have served your country dutifully. The federal government, the IRS, and the NSA are targeting Americans just like you. Because of your beliefs and because of big government's corrupt policies, you are a threat and fall into the same category as a terrorist. Now they are monitoring everything you do online. You are at risk unless you know how to disappear forever. Go to privacyradio.com now to protect yourself. That's privacyradio.com.
You know about RVs, you've heard about bunkers, but surviving is not recreation, and man wasn't made to live underground. Introducing Survivalist Camps, the ultimate fully functional off-the-grid survival bug-out house that's mobile, well-equipped, and custom-built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Go to survivalistcamps.com to learn more. That's survivalistcamps.com, providing your basic needs to survive. Survivalistcamps.com.
Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Order today at 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org.
Hello, it's Tom Chenault from The Tom Chenault Show. We are experts in home-based business and residual income. We show people how to make money from their home, either part-time or full-time. And in partnership with Genesis Communication Network, we've organized a team to fight back about people not having money, time, or health. And we need your help. What we want you to do is, if you've got an interest in building an organization to fight back against people taking our money, taking our time, and taking our health, we want to talk to you. All you need to do is call this number, 855-308-8326. Again, all you want to do is call 855-308-8326. You can make a tremendous amount of money and end up fighting for a great cause. Please call us right now.
Hi, this is Ted Phillips, listening to the Paracast, and it's as good as it gets, believe me.
On the Paracast with Gene and Chris, we could have done another two shows like this, but we're happy to have Kevin Randall and Scott Ramsey together
but
to continue.
But I haven't had to whip out the Band-Aids and the Vaseline as a cut man here. This is great. You guys are, you know, debating this topic in a way that it should be debated, and I commend you both. I think you both are putting forth compelling arguments. Obviously, Scott, there's things that, as when we left, Kevin was suggesting that you should consider doing, and I agree. One thing I want to add is getting George to go on the record so we can look him up in the Roswell Base yearbook.
Scott's got a copy of the yearbook, and they've looked him up, and that really kind of ends that debate.
And no, the guy Scott doesn't Roswell. Have a copy of the book. Dennis Balthaser has a copy of the book.
However, he's got a copy of it. I've got a CD with a copy of it on it.
There you go.
You know, which
Kevin
helped periodically.
Kevin's right about, you know, you got to vet these people, and we do. We there's probably a stack here, and maybe two, of other people that have made claims over the year, and whether the claims are legitimate or not, we can't prove what they're saying. Therefore, they don't make it into the book. Going back to Thomas Bass, who his nickname was Sam Bass, he is in the Base yearbook. We have a picture of that. There's no doubt that he existed. And the CCAF database that you refer to, and like all of them, they all have a disclaimer. And the CCAF database, their disclaimer at the end says the CCAF database is known to contain errors. It's right there, the database you used, the one you cite.
Okay, do errors mean omission of material or material in that document that is not correct?
They don't go beyond that.
Way they can basically hedge their bets.
Well, they have to. It's a nonprofit group of volunteers that maintain these sites. Kevin, I know you've found errors over the years doing your research. We found a good one, and I'll make this quick because I know you're running out of time. The P-80 fighter that crashed out in Carrizozo back in 47. Do you remember that, Kevin? Does that ring a bell?
I know about the event, yes.
Yeah. You look at what J. Andy Kistner, the state rep, when he pulled that crash, he got a crash report that says the pilot was making a dead stick approach almost out of fuel, and he was trying to get back to La Marcha Air Force Base in California. I go down to Maxwell, sit there for 5 days, because there was some key threads to that crash that we want to use for comparison. Archie DeFonte comes up and says, oh, here's the one we gave to Kistner. I said, okay, let's keep digging, because this is completely different from what the mayor is telling us. We find a second crash report. This one's an internal document, marked classified, which I have right here. The other one was to be released to the press. The second crash report has them taking off.
Well, you know why they classify those reports.
Well, I know why they did this one, and it's to help your case, but go ahead.
No, the reason they classify, well, it wasn't really an accident report either, I guess. Accident reports are classified so that when they interview various people, they will speak freely and say exactly what happened without fear of repercussion from the chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
So the accident reports are always classified.
Well, I think this one is a little more classified because he's going up to photograph flying saucers flying near Roswell Army Airfield.
Just saying that there's the reason accident reports are classified. That's what it is.
Right. But, you know, you can request documents, and we found it with Aztec. You make three requests with three different people at Maxwell, you get three different pile of documents. But anyway.
That's interesting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've got good examples right here. Well, the P-80 is the classic one where one he's landing, one he's taking off. Which one was it?
Your tax dollars are at work, ladies and gentlemen.
But we stray off the Aztec case here. We've gone off on a lot of different tangents here, and what we really need is some solid evidence that the events took place in March of 1948, and we have a lot of people talking about this, but there's nothing to prove that the event took place in 1948. It's all post-Scully, and that's the real problem. We need to find something that is pre-Scully. It's the same problem I have with
well, that's about, I've been saying the last 2 hours, 3 hours here, broadcast time. Yeah, we need really good slam dunk, even smoking evidence pre-Scully. That's really important.
Yes, that would be a very critical and very persuasive bit of evidence to find some documentation pre-Scully.
Scott, so how do you do that? Can you do that?
I don't know if you could hear me. I said yes.
Okay, so how are you going to do that at this late stage? How are you going to find that documentation? If that's what makes someone like Kevin Randall dismiss this thing entirely,
I give you one hint right here. And since Scott has the inroads to the people in Aztec, is ask those people if anybody's got a personal diary, anybody's got letters, anybody's got anything that mentions this event prior to Scully. You know, in that time frame, a lot of people kept diaries. A lot of people kept notes. One of the things that really harmed the Barney Barnett case was Ruth Barnett, it turned out, kept a diary for 1947. So on the dates that he supposedly was seeing the UFO, we know exactly where he was because Ruth Barnett's diary told us. And we found that because we asked for those sorts of things. And Alice Knight finally said, oh, I found my aunt kept a diary and I have it. And so that's one of the ways you do it.
Yeah, I'm sure Scott, much to Scott's credit, I'm sure he has really banged a bunch of Chico bushes around there for that sort of thing. But your point is well taken, I'm sure. And Scott, you probably agree that it would be great to come up with that.
I'd like to have the lug nuts off of it. Let's go back to that. Valentine Archuleta. He's passed now, and unfortunately his wife has. His daughters and son are alive. Valentine was telling this story in 48, right there in Aztec. He has the ranch. If you're standing at the what we call the crash site and looking due south, his ranch is almost perfectly due south of the mesa. He was telling this story in March of 48.
And you document that how?
I document it through interviews of not him, but his kids, his nephews, and his cousins.
Did he write it down?
You also, yeah, that's the point. Did he write it down? And you also told me that the one guy that bought Dunning's land said he bought it in 1948, and you checked the record and found out that he didn't buy it until 1953. So without documentation,
no,
I
agree.
Hearsay.
But
that's the point. We've got nothing that is pre-Scully that we can nail down. You know, if the guy went on the radio and talked about it and he had a transcript from 1948, if he wrote it down, if there was some bit of evidence that's proved that he was talking about this pre-Scully, that would be great. But afterwards, you know, saying, well, I talked about it before Scully's book came out, that doesn't do us any good.
So your position, Kevin, and we're just about to wrap it up, so we have to really keep it quick here. Your position is that the Scully book contaminated the evidence trail and made it more difficult. We know this is not going to get solved today. We didn't expect that it would be. Scott Ramsey's book is called The Aztec Incident, written with his wife Suzanne, Frank Thayer, and Frank Warren. And I gather there will be new additions to this book ongoing as they get further information. Scott, do you have a website where people can check it out?
Yeah, absolutely. www.theaztecincident.com. You can read segments of the book, and if you have an interest, you can purchase a book from the website.
And, Scott, you're almost sold out of your first printing.
We actually did sell out. I retained a few books here to fill the interim before the second printing. But, yeah,
going to have an abridged sort of second edition with some of the new information? Oh, good.
Yeah, so I'm going to quit calling Mount Taylor and call it Taylor Mountain and fix the spellings.
Okay, Kevin Randall, where do we find more of your stuff?
You can, of course, it's on Amazon.com. You can take a look at my blog.
Different perspectives.
Yes, thank you. And my latest book is Alien Mysteries, Conspiracies, and Cover-Ups, which should be in your bookstores even as we speak.
We covered it the last time you were on the show. And by the way, Chris O'Brien, tell our listeners, where can we find your stuff?
Well, it's a strange planet. It's ourstrangeplanet.com.
And he's working on a book called Stalking the Herd. You can find us on Twitter, where we are known as the Paracast. Imagine that. We also have a Paracast fan club on Facebook, but actually the way it's worked out, we have two, and someday we'll figure out how to merge them with one. You can also check out our web portal at www.theparacast.com. We also have forums at forum.theparacast.com where you can post your questions. We didn't get to everything today because there's just no way, too much to cover. Scott Ramsey, Kevin Randall, thank you both so much for joining us on the Paracast.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Gene. Thank you, everybody.
Scott?
Thanks, Gene. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Kevin. It was a lot of fun.
Okay.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
There's a huge and hushed up conspiracy going on that's about to turn your lives upside down in the coming few months. Unbelievably, the media are keeping quiet about this. I'm sure they know it, but they probably know that revealing it on TV will generate mass hysteria and chaos. But I believe you should be informed about it, because when the sinister agenda is finally accomplished and everything unravels, only those who know this secret info will survive and thrive. Go to 123conspiracy.com right now to see the truth. The video at 123conspiracy.com reveals the real, secret reason why Obama is after your guns and ammo. And it's not just in response to mass murders or preparing for war. It's something much darker. Go watch the video now at 123conspiracy.com before they shut it down. Again, that's 123conspiracy.com.